This podcast features three supposed adults who definitely use adult language. They're also supposedly writers who are definitely not procrastinating by making this podcast. Listener discretion is advised. Welcome to No Bad Ideas, the storytelling game show where we take the worst ideas from the internet and try to turn them into stories that are actually good.
Good quality may vary.
Yes, goodness. Well, you know, goodness is a spectrum. It's not a... There isn't sort of like a clear division between bad and good, right?
Sure.
Yeah.
Let's go with that.
Let's not explore that idea any further and instead just jump straight into introductions. My name is Gabriel Urbina.
I'm Zach Valenti.
And my name is Sarah Shackett.
And this week we are honored to be joined by a very special guest.
Yes. We have the amazing opportunity today to get to talk to someone that... whose work we all really love. It is the author of the science fiction novel Six Wakes, the urban fantasy book The Shambling Guide to New York, and its sequel The Ghost Train to New Orleans, and most recently the novelization to Solo, a Star Wars story, amongst a couple of other awesome things. She's also known for, in the words of NPR, her groundbreaking work as a geek culture podcaster, where she's been the creative powerhouse behind shows such as I Should Be Writing and Ditch Diggers. She has won Hugo, Campbell, Parsec Awards. We're very lucky to have her with the show today. Ladies and gentlemen, Mer Lafferty.
Hi, guys.
Hi.
Mer, thank you so much for being on the show.
And it's exciting to be here. I always feel weird when people introduce me like that. I'm like, did I do all that stuff, really?
Well, you did it, and I think that you deserve credit. So we're going to make sure that you get it. So, No Bad Ideas, for anyone that is joining us for the first time. Every week, we get something that is an article, a listing, anything from the internet where you hear something that somebody did in the real world. And we go... my God, that's a bad idea. And then we have 30 minutes to try to turn it into a good story, or at least the beginnings of a good story. And for most of us, what that bad idea is going to be a complete surprise. This week, this week I'm bringing the bad idea. So I've seen this before, but none of you have heard what I'm about to say before I read it out loud.
Well, you had better do it then.
Alrighty. So this week's bad idea comes from the weird news section of NPR.
Oh, good.
And it is titled, "We Miss You, Europol Writes Postcards to Its Most Wanted Fugitives."
Okay.
So the article reads, "Police forces across Europe are penning whimsical postcards to their most wanted fugitives this summer in the hopes that increased awareness will lead to more arrests. The fugitives addressed in these 'wish you were here' postcards are accused of serious crimes in 21 European Union countries and are believed to be outside of the countries where they allegedly committed the crimes. While most of us are enjoying a well-deserved summer break, criminals are not taking time off from crime," European law enforcement agency Europol writes. "Holiday destinations have proven to be popular hiding places for criminals on the run from law enforcement. They might even have chosen the same destination as you. The digital cards are posted on the Europe's Most Wanted Fugitive website, and people can click to see a photo of the fugitive and more information about them. The cards cheekily attempt to entice their subject back by pointing out things they might be missing. For example, one reads, 'Tibor, we haven't seen you in a while.' The Austrian news police write to Tibor Foko, who is wanted for murder, 'We have one more space left in our ski trip. Please come back and enjoy our beautiful Alps.' To Marco Di Lauro, accused of murder, drug traffic, and robbery, Italian police write, 'Don't you miss the taste of real Italian cuisine, prepared with love by someone who really loves you? Come back to the sun-kissed shores of Italy for a truly authentic experience you'll never forget. Of course, it's highly implausible that the fugitives will answer the fawning messages from law enforcement. Police are hoping that members of the public will share the postcards. The more the postcards are seen, the better the chance of police locating these criminals and putting them behind bars. European authorities say crowdsourcing has become increasingly important as a law enforcement tool. EU police launched Europe's most wanted fugitive site in 2016. Since then, Europol says 36 criminals featured as most wanted fugitives have been arrested, of whom at least 11 were apprehended as a direct result of information provided by the public via the EU most wanted platform, right? As The Guardian writes, one of these caught after featuring on Europol's list was Salah Abdeslam.
Wait, this actually worked?
Well, apparently, at least once. Who was arrested in Molenbeek, Brussels on the 18th of March 2016 after being on the run for 126 days following terrorist attacks in Paris in November of 2015. So that's the end of the article. I just want to read some of the postcards for you guys.
Wow.
So for example, one of them says, "Dear Marco, the waters of the Adriatic are missing you. Come sail with us for a trip you will never forget. Warm regards, the police." Another one reads, "Dear George, Count Dracula is celebrating his annual vampire parade and you're invited.
Wait, what?
Come late at night and we'll be waiting for you in Romania. Signed, the police." And another one says, "Dear Victor, we know you like spice stuff, so we have prepared a very spicy goulash for you. Come back home. Signed, the police."
Okay.
Oh.
Okay.
So let me set a timer. Geez.
All right.
30 minutes starting now.
Can we just back up to like the Count Dracula parade? I want more context on that.
I forgot to say this, dear listeners, but if you look in the podcast episode description, you'll see a link to the article where you'll be able to actually look at some of these postcards. And the postcard that had the vampire parade that
vampire
Count Dracula
parade,
is
right.
hosting, it has like this like nice picture of like Count Dracula's castle that apparently the tourism board in Romania
is quite
this
proud
is
of, I'm
bizarre.
Sure.
Bizarre.
Wow.
It's a nighttime parade, right?
One hopes.
Yes,
okay, good.
Yes. But yes, modern law enforcement agencies
sending postcards
to the most wanted criminals.
Okay. Did you set the timer?
The clock is running.
Oh, good. Cool. Boy, there are a couple ways to go with this, I guess.
Oh, man.
So how do you guys figure out your protagonist?
Well, so that's a good question, right? Because we could focus on a couple of different people. We could do like a catch me if you can, like the criminal is sort of the main character.
Mm-hmm.
Or we could go with the social media intern that had this brilliant idea.
Yeah.
Right, like right. I kind of like the idea of it being the person that decides to try this approach. And at first, everyone kind of looks down on
that. Right. That's sort of laughed at. Like, you don't. Why would you say anything nice, even tongue in cheek? Like, this is a serious job kind of a vibe that they're fighting against.
But then, sure enough, crowdsourcing at work, one of them gets arrested, and all of a sudden, people start taking it more seriously. The other way to do it would be, I guess, catch me if you can ask, kind of about the relationship between sort of
between a law enforcement officer and
Between the intern that's writing these social media posts and the criminals.
Sure.
What do you think, Mer?
I'm thinking of a clever way to actually bring down the police department by offering really stupid ideas and being surprised that they're actually going with it. And so, you know, it goes from postcards to throwing a parade for the criminals, celebrating their greatest crimes, hoping they'll show up.
Oh, man.
And just getting bigger and bigger and more ridiculous. And it being like the producers where it actually begins to work and not knowing what to do with yourself because your secret goal is to bring down the whole thing.
Right. At a certain point, you kind of lean into the cartoon logic of if you start to do like a parade commemorating everything that the villains have done, the villains sooner or later have to show up because either ego or, you know,
just curiosity or...
Or they're getting a detail wrong and we need to correct them. Like, you know, you said that I robbed 33 banks in Brussels last year. It was actually 35.
Right.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah. And I'm curious why, I guess, is this like a friend of the criminal who's trying to help their buddy get away? Is this someone who has like very strong ideological concerns about policing and sort of how law enforcement conduct themselves? Like, what do we think is motivating this sabotage operation?
Well, I wonder if like there's like some sort of significant other of a social media intern at the police that is an event, like an aspiring events organizer, and they just get so attached to their like Grammys for crime as it like,
wait, what?
Blows up.
Grammys for crime?
Well, you know, I mean, you have like
that,
the
I
award.
That, I think that that's the natural escalation ceremony. Of this idea.
Oh, sure.
Like, or, you know, right. Like, that is definitely kind of like the third act natural conclusion of this where, you know,
yeah.
It's like you start to have like the crimeys or right. something, and you're kind of wondering who will actually show up to collect their right. award.
The crimeys, great title for the episode.
And then you have like, you know, acclaimed artists sort of suddenly entering like bank robbing just because they got to complete their EGOT to be a Kiga.
Oh boy.
See, that is the way that it complicates it. Like at a certain point, like you're starting to catch criminals, but you're all of a sudden having like Leonardo DiCaprio dipping his toe into like the world of crime, and you're kind of going like, wait a minute, no, hang on a second, this is not what we were hoping this was going to accomplish.
There could also be instead of sabotage, you could also be like two social media interns at the police station trying to one up each yeah. other to get a final job. So then we have to come up with something weird that the other one does.
I like that.
I like that idea a lot.
Yeah, kind of like the keeping up with the Joneses of
yeah.
police.
Oh, sure.
Of eccentric police work.
Of police communications jobs. Yeah, and I wonder if it makes more sense to have them sort of in that spirit doing more and more things that are like counterintuitively friendly to criminals, or having one have like a very different perspective and doing like more copsy things.
Wait a minute, Sarah. Are you saying that you're wondering if one should be a good cop and the other one should be a...
don't finish that. Yes, that is what I'm wondering. And I genuinely don't know which approach would be funnier, because this is definitely a comedy.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Like, this seems
no
like something out of a farce.
Commentary
this seems like something out of a farce, except Interpol actually did this.
Yes.
God, you wonder what ideas they turned down.
Right. What was in the discarded pile?
Yeah. What was on that whiteboard?
If they saw this and they were like, yes, let's do this.
Valentine's.
Valentine's. Secret admirer notes.
Right, right. I guess the other way to escalate it, if this is going to be sort of a social media campaign, is to like try and do something meme-y or viral, but around a criminal. Like, what 10-year later challenge could they come up with?
Right. And so, you know, you have...
I'm sorry, what's a 10-year later challenge?
This is like a photo thing on, I guess,
right,
we've been
right,
seeing
right,
it on
right,
Twitter,
right.
Where they have like, yeah, just side by side photos from, right. And then like, my mind goes to like the ice bucket challenge. Like,
oh, sure.
Like,
yeah.
Ice bucket, but with the money you've stolen. Yeah, like they try to get that to go
or
viral.
Or something to do with like handcuff yourself to a place so we can't even get you.
Right. You know, just try to sell kind of like, you know, your... You know, the big thing in the world of crime is
sure.
you post a picture of wherever you're going to rob next 24 hours before you rob it, because, you know, you need to kind of throw the gauntlet.
No, it's just like checking in on Instagram, right?
Interesting. So like now the social media interns are suddenly becoming undercover police by pretending to be criminals and like handcuffing themselves to the place they're going to rob and dumping the money over their head.
Wait, they're
for like
right,
cred
because they're trying to kind of sell. Because they're trying to get it going. Thing.
Yeah, right.
Got it.
Mm. Oh my god. Okay, this went very far down the rabbit hole very quickly. I'm kind of curious before we keep exploring the sort of like cartoony extremes of this. I want to go back to sort of Murr's question about who are the protagonists here? Sort of like, you know, like what are the, I guess now we're talking about kind of like two people that sure. are running this. And, you know, Sarah, you suggested kind of that they could be competing for a job. But is there anything that we want to flesh out about them beyond kind of like they're both just gunning to see who can catch more criminals?
Probably, yeah. And, you know, at the risk of going back to a good cop, bad cop place, you probably want them to have, even if, you know, one of them is not, you know, they don't have to be like one does is a sort of by the books and one's more loose and like plays it as it lays or whatever. But you probably want them to have very strong perspectives that sort of inspire the competition, right?
Yeah, I'd say so. I mean, you've got a, instead of good cop, bad cop, I'm sort of thinking of the Southern phrase of it's easier to catch flies with honey than vinegar.
Yeah.
Hmm.
So one person uses the honey, which I suppose is the fan letters, wish you were here, postcards. And the other one uses something more antagonist, like the handcuff thing.
Sure, something more stunty.
Yes. Ooh, stunts. Flash mobs. People still doing flash mobs? Am I too old for this?
No,
not at all.
There's still a thing.
Okay. Definitely flash mobs still happening out in the world. Right, but I kind of like this idea of one is maybe playing up to kind of the ego, and mm-hmm. the other one is playing up to the, I don't know, like the need for kindness or the need for emotional
right.
support that these criminals on the run have.
Yeah, one is sort of sort of angling at their ambition and sense of grandeur, and the other is, you know, trying to sort of hit them in you know, sort of their nostalgia and homesickness, and sort of more sentimental feelings.
So, what's our setting? Are we still in Europe?
That's a great question.
Up for debate.
I don't think we have to be.
It might be helpful to... It could be somewhere in Europe, but I think it might be helpful to pick a city
right.
where this is happening. Just so that it isn't kind of all over the entire continent.
Yeah, and there's a little bit of focus because you want both these people in one office.
Yeah.
So that they can yell at each other.
That's the key to all good stories.
Right.
Face-to-face yelling.
I don't know. What's a good, like, international city where, like, conceivably a lot of people could be hanging out on the run from crime or, like, where... criminals flee from.
So you're saying where do criminals vacation?
Yeah, what's their favorite vacation spot?
I think it's the Caribbean, isn't it?
Right, like the Cayman Islands or
yeah.
Wherever has non-extradition treaties.
Yeah. Did anybody ever read Sandman and see the issue about the serial killer convention?
Yeah. It could be sort of something like that, where they're trying to figure out how to target this particular Caribbean island that the population is about 43%
criminal
and like most wanted criminals.
Right.
Like,
so it's just like criminal island, basically.
But it isn't like small town crook island. It's like Carmen San Diego and people like at her level.
They have beachfront property there.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Which, having now seen one of the documentaries, I think is what Fire Festival was going for. That's a terrible joke. I'm kidding.
Yeah, it could be like on Jamaica or in Havana or something.
Oh, I like that.
Just somewhere where it's like, what did you say? Like 43% criminal, probably like 23% tourist. And then like the rest are
the actual locals yeah. that actually like live and work there.
Right.
And I guess it would be nice because the criminals would be like, we don't steal anything from you guys. Like, you know, we're too busy planning like a heist of the Guggenheim.
Right.
We don't want to steal something from the local
convenience store. Do that where you live, you know?
No,
yeah, no. Yeah, no, definitely not. You want to be... Because when the cops come by, you want them to, you want your neighbors to say, but they were always so nice.
Right. But so now are the like interns becoming worse criminals on this island than the criminals they're trying to catch?
The interns could be the developers of this place. Like they're trying to kind of engineer that this island actually happened and that all these criminals move here. Like that could also be
a
possibility.
A
yeah.
Wow. That's intricate. Are they from the island?
Ooh, that's... that's interesting.
Yeah. I feel like this may help us crack how are they different from each other. Because maybe one of them is from the island, and then the other mm-hmm. one like is basically like chasing the celebrity of, you know, being part of this police force, looking to make a name for themselves. And so it's like the local versus the, you know, the outsider.
Of course. And the local knows what's going on. And one of the criminals is probably a good friend of their grandmother. They play canasta together.
Right.
You know, this is starting to hit close to home because growing up in Costa Rica, where tourism is something around 65% of the economy, there is kind of the sense of the locals just being like, we want to get tourists for whatever reason. And people sometimes being like, are you sure that you want people coming over for this thing? This is kind of a not great thing. And most people sort of end up going like, oh, we don't care. We just like all tourism is good tourism. There's no such thing as like, you know, an unwanted tourist. And so I wonder if there's anything to, again, kind of like in a producer's like scheme that would go terribly wrong.
And maybe they're not law enforcement. This is the tourism board.
Right. It's sort of like, you know, these two guys kind of, you know, they're trying to figure out how to revitalize the island, how to like bring some economy back into it. And they kind of maybe like discover like, oh, like two of the people that are frequent visitors to the island are these two criminals that are using it as a hideaway or kind of like a, you know, a place to lay low for a while. And then it's kind of like, how can we revamp this island to turn it into the Mecca for all of the world's most wanted criminals?
They're doing a fire festival for criminals? Or is it actually going to happen?
That's interesting. That's a good question.
That is a good question.
Of course, after a fire festival, you'd think people might be catch on to such problems, but I don't know.
Right. People are a little bit more on guard about all that.
Yeah.
Maybe, yeah.
You'd hope.
Although very different kinds of people as the attendees of Fire Festival and International Thieves.
I suppose.
And also there's the difference between selling a weekend rock concert and like a place to live.
Right.
True.
What's our time, by the way?
I was about to check on that. You have 12 minutes.
Oh, so much time.
Acres of time.
Yeah, I suppose we should decide if we want the story to be about weird ways to catch criminals or this sort of island, you know, producers style weird island revitalization scheme.
I'm open to either direction. Does anybody have a preference, an inclination?
Either way,
I kind of like the revitalization scheme.
Yeah.
Just, you know, welcoming the criminals.
And either way, it kind of ends up being about how do you get into the psychology of the criminal mind? Like, how do you make something sound appealing to the world's worst criminals?
Right. And draw attention to people who absolutely do not want attention drawn to them.
Right. All right. Let's run with the revitalization scheme.
Are our protagonists still competing, or do we think they are sort of working together Bialystok and Bloom like?
I mean, I think there's inherently more conflict in the sort of like crime island pusher, like the, you know, say the outsider who's like come in to make a name for themselves as a marketer and live in the most exciting island in the world. And then the person who grew up there, who's like, no, like, this is my home. And like, this is stupid. Stop trying to pimp out my hometown to the world.
But also, holy shit, someone who probably pulled over the Louvre just bought a house.
And yeah, like, that was going to be my question. How does the local person get talked into
doing this? Yeah.
Well, they're probably looking for somebody local to be a liaison, or the kid just graduated from party planning school and suddenly that's the only job.
Right.
I'm being simplistic here, but...
No, but I hear you. And it often does kind of, in, as far as I understand from these scenarios and from what I've seen, it often does kind of come down a little bit to like, well, do you want to do this thing or do you want to wait 2 years for the next job?
Yeah.
Like, do you want to just kind of like hang out and not have anything to do with your time? So it could be something like that. I'm also just curious about like, is there anything that the local might want to do that this is enabling, or that this is kind of like allowing to bloom? And so there's kind of this sense of like, well, I'm only going to sell my soul a little bit
so that, like, I can do this other thing.
Right. And obviously I'm going to stop before it gets out of control. And, you know, like it's only going to be a couple of the world's most dangerous criminals. It's going to be fine.
And what if it's sold to the local as the local doesn't know it's for the criminals? That's a reveal sometime later on.
Right. It's just like this weird campaign.
Revitalization, bringing in new blood.
Right.
More money.
And it's just sold to the locals as, oh, we're just bringing in high spenders from the real estate market in the States and in a couple of places in Europe and China and Australia.
Right. And then the conflict really kicks up when the new campaign comes out from the new person that's like direct letters.
Right.
Right. In like full color in the New York, you know, full page color ads in the New York Times. Like,
right. Like, it starts as this sort of slightly odd, like there are just these sort of weird flashes of like, I wonder why that word is there. And then it escalates to the point where you get the postcards and the local, you know, can no longer willfully ignore who this is for.
Okay. So then it's kind of like there's two major tensions now. There's kind of the tension of, can we attract the world's major criminals? Right. Will this work? Will this not? And then there is the tension of, can we keep the secret from all of the locals who are really benefiting from the influx of money, the influx of tourism, right, just like the attention that their tiny little island is getting, but would all be mortified or devastated or possibly even like very afraid to find out that the nice woman that just moved into like the house on the cove is Carmen Sandiego.
I mean, I think Carmen Sandiego would be an awesome neighbor because she'd never be there.
That's right. No noise.
Yeah.
You probably make a lot of, your kids could probably make a lot of money feeding your cats.
Probably. Yeah. Very probably.
Okay, cool. I like where this is going. Like, this is now, I think, starting to come into focus in a good way.
Okay. Let's see. Do we want to talk about sort of how it resolves, or do we want to talk about the characters a little bit more right now?
Let's spend a little bit longer on the characters.
Cool.
I'm curious about this outsider. What brings them to this place? Like, why do they end up there?
I mean, sort of the immediate obvious answer is that they failed somewhere else.
Oh, yeah. Failing up.
Yeah. I mean, failing to Caribbean island is, I would love some of that failure.
Sweet, sweet failure.
But yeah, that like they are here because they couldn't make it, or something happened that sort of screwed them out of, you know, the Madison Avenue office or whatever.
Or it's their last chance because they screwed up. No, it seems too big to be a last chance.
Right. Like the other possibility in my mind is that it's like the opposite of that being they are basically hungry to prove themselves. And this is like the biggest like thing they can get themselves into where they're, you know,
right. Like there isn't as much competition to go here as there would be to go
right on the Madison Avenue.
Yeah.
And it's also just like prospecting for that next big thing. Like this is like 180-ing a market as opposed to getting into a more competitive, you know, it's like blue water, so to speak, instead of red water where there's like sharks already feasting in
New York
City.
Right, this is someone who sort of looks at the opportunities that most people would see as opportunities and be like, no, that's played out. I'm going to go here where no one else is.
Right, they want to be a pioneer. They want to do something that, you know, everybody says can't be done and maybe shouldn't be done.
Yeah, actually.
Yeah.
And so what does that person need? Kind of like, okay, so they want to be this pioneer and like, you know, discover, be the first person to discover gold where no one else has found gold. What is the lesson that they need to learn, or what is the thing that they need to grow?
Maybe it's like a careful what you wish for situation, like play with fire, gonna get burned. Like they end up getting robbed.
We invited all these criminals. Who knew that they would actually rob us and kill our mothers?
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Or at a certain...
What? Actions have consequences?
It could also be funny if some of the criminals actually like started helping out with the tourism board and then took over and then stole the credit. And he was just like, wait, no, I did all of this. And these guys are just like, I don't know what you're talking about. We've literally never seen you before. You have never been in like the offices of whatever, whatever, and whatever. And he's like, those three whatevers are my last name. Like, come on, no, like, I started this office.
No, that would be really funny. There's also a world, there's also a comedic world where this person learns nothing.
Oh, sure. Where they're just kind of like a monster from like beginning to end.
Gordon right. Gekko, greed is good.
Because I'm thinking about like, is there a different antagonist figure? But it's such a weird, strange, you know, swing for the fences move that maybe like...
In the 2 minutes and 40 seconds that we have left, is there any sense of how this might possibly end?
Throwing a party for Interpol on the same island.
Love it.
Right, like the Interpol retreat, the like, you know.
Right.
So once the local realizes what's going on, they try to use their reach to get a Interpol type thing going on there.
Oh man, and then it just becomes this lively destination that has both criminals and cops there at the same time.
Yeah.
And is that to like get their island back?
Or just keep the tourism coming, but not make it ever go away.
Hmm.
Like, want to turn their island into the water hole where the predators don't kill the prey because they all realize it's neutral ground.
Right.
Right. It suddenly becomes Tortuga.
Out. Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, that's, I like that idea of like...
The Switzerland of crime.
Right. Mm-hmm. Because if the whole reason why this is even plausible is that like, this is a place that has like very like lax... tax laws and very, you know, no extradition treaties and so on.
And a pleasant climate year round.
Of course.
Beachfront views.
That's right.
There may not be a lot of an opportunity for Europol to like get the guys, but they can at least kind of like be around and
Right. And have some daiquiris while they're there.
Excellent. All right. 1 minute. Any other details? Any other last thoughts?
So I feel like this culminates in a dance between
nice.
Police.
I'm thinking there needs.
Thieves.
I'm sorry.
Oh no! What were you going
to
say?
I was thinking there needs to be some sort of romance there.
Absolutely.
You know, B plot kind of romance.
Oh, for sure.
Carmen Sandiego and the
head of Europol.
Yeah.
Or like maybe like the local and a criminal.
Oh sure.
Yeah.
Hmm.
That like suddenly.
Changes their mind on a life
of
crime.
Sure. Or, you know, on who they're marketing to.
Yeah.
Right. But, you know, maybe criminals aren't so bad after all. And, like, you know, someone else can be like, are you actually hearing what you are saying out loud?
Right.
Right.
Right. Yeah, I don't think our outsider and our local have a thing. I think that's strictly competitive.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, me probably too. Not.
Agreed.
And on that agreement, that is time.
Wow. What an idea. Thank you for bringing it, Gabriel.
No, thank you guys for running with it. That you ran very, very far. You ran all the way to the Caribbean. And Mer, thank you for helping us out.
That was fun. Who's going to write it?
Oh, that's a great question.
Isn't that the next step for you guys? One of you has to write this thing now?
Funny that you should ask. We are talking about the possibility of doing that, but we'll have to see where that goes.
Yeah.
Awesome.
And we'll have to see where we go once we get back from the break. All right, you guys, we're going to go back to the show in just a moment. But we've got a couple of fast announcements, and they might be fast, but they're actually like pretty big.
It's actually really exciting.
A couple of things that we're really, really psyched to share with y'all. And the first and the most important one is that we want your help to go on an adventure.
That is one word for it.
Yes, I am choosing my words very carefully here. No, but like, here's the thing, guys. Real talk. Since we started this show, people have been asking us, are you going to turn one of these bad ideas into a full script? Are you going to actually write out the good story of these bad ideas? And so far, the answer has been a lot has been a lot of that sounds really hard and that sounds like something that we don't have time for and that sounds like something that just seems like a bad idea in and of itself. But more and more, as we keep talking about these, we've come around to actually this might not be as terrible of an idea as we think it is.
It might just be our kind of bad idea.
Oh, yeah.
Just crazy enough.
So yeah, we would like to do this. We would like to take one of the pitches for an idea that we've talked about on the show and turn it into a full script. And we think we figured out a way to make that
possible,
feasible, and not kill us. No promises, though. So if you are already a patron over on our Patreon page, you may have already seen this. But if you're not a patron, you can come join us. And if we hit $150 per episode of the show, we will put up a poll of bad ideas that we have talked about. Patrons can vote on it. And the winner will be the idea that we take and make a full script.
And then the madness will begin in earnest as we will actually write out a full script for that idea, or we'll start to at least.
Yes. And then every, I think, $50 more that the show makes, we will release 15 pages of that script.
That's right.
Patrons will get early access, and then everyone else, it will just be a bad idea that lives on the internet. And I'm actually pretty excited about that.
And we're really excited to go on this adventure with you guys. We're really excited to have you help us choose which bad idea we're going to do. We're really excited to be able to share whatever we end up writing with you guys first.
It's going to be terrible.
But it's also going to be great, Zach.
Positivity. It's going to be amazing. I'm so excited for this.
Yes. So check it out and help us out. But wait, because that is not the only thing that we're doing.
That's right. There's never been a better time to become a member of the No Bad Ideas Patreon community. We now have a $1 tier where for just $1 per episode, you're going to get a bonus back half, as well as some occasional
bloopers as they might arise. And so that'll also go out to all of our existing patrons. So if you give a buck, if you give $3 and are getting the Blitz edition of our game, where you get a mini condensed version of the Bad Ideas game that we play at the beginning of the episode, you're now basically going to get a full little mini episode every single week.
Yeah, we'll take a listener question from our patrons in the bonus back half. Something that is fun, maybe germane to writing and creativity, maybe not, but is something that we can do in 10 minutes. And we're really excited to kind of stealthily be making an episode and a half every week now. It's pretty cool. And if you're already a patron, thank you so much for being there. We hope you're enjoying the extra stuff. If you have not yet gone to nobadideaspodcast.com/support, maybe think about it because there's cool stuff there.
But somehow,
there's one more thing.
There's even more.
But it's not just one more thing. It's two more things.
It's two more things, yes. No, and this is...
We're liars. We're just the worst liars.
It's dear listeners, it is good for you to know this about us up front. Like, you should know about our lying ways. But this is just in case anyone out there amongst our listenership just wants to be a total badass patron of the arts and fund all of our dreams and just everything that we want to do this year. We've put two more stretch goals on our Patreon campaign. Super stretchy goals, but the ones stretchiest that we're super excited about too. And one is that if we get to $500 per episode of No Bad Ideas, we're not only going to run No Bad Ideas, we're not only going to write out a full script for one of the bad ideas, but we're also going to produce a brand new audio drama miniseries, something totally new. And we're not just going to write it out. We're actually going to go into a studio and record it and release it. Kind of like what we did for Time Bombs last year, but it's going to be a brand new thing.
And on top of that, if we hit $1,000 per episode of No Bad Ideas, we are going to bring you No Bad Ideas Live.
What is
that going to be? That's a really good question.
I love how you preempted my snarky question of what that was going to look like, because we don't know yet. But when we get there, we think this is a good tier for us to be able to figure it out, that every couple months we'll be somewhere in the world, hopefully with some fun guests, and be able to do this show in front of some of you all and take audience suggestions and do the whole live theater thing.
We're really excited to get to meet some of you guys and just tour around, maybe even live stream it for those of you who can't make it. But all of those are things that we will have to figure out when we reach that.
And we know that that might take a while, but we just wanted to let you know that that is where we want to go. Like, we want to get to that point where this can be a live experience for us and for you guys. So if you feel like helping us get there, every little bit counts. So thank you so much for everything.
You can check all of this out at nobadideaspodcast.com/support. One more time, that's nobadideaspodcast.com/support.
All right, that was a lot, but thank you for bearing through all that.
Yes,
and now,
you.
Back to the show. And we are back to No Bad Ideas for the back half of the show with our amazing guest, Mer Lafferty. And the back half is kind of the more...
unstructured?
Would you guys call it? Just like the wibblier part of the show, where we kind of use it to talk about anything related to creativity, to writing, to living and breathing and existing while balancing that with creative pursuits. And as long as I've got you three brilliant people here with me, I thought it would be a good opportunity to talk about something that we get a lot of questions about.
Sure.
On the Twitter and on the emails and
All of the places.
All of the places. We get a lot of variations on the question of how do you find balance in your day to do the things that are creative and the things that let you continue to eat and continue to have food and continue to have a roof over your head? Or alternatively, how do you balance one big creative project with another big creative project? Do you take turns? Like, do you work on one thing in January and then another thing in February? Do you work on thing one in the morning and thing two in the afternoon? Just kind of a lot of questions about how do you do all these things that on most of the time would probably eat up all of your attention span. How do you do more than one of them at the same time? And how do you find the focus and the ability to do these things? And so I kind of wanted to, on behalf of our many listeners and readers, kind of present this to the forum and see if anybody had any thoughts other than my thoughts, which is, it's really difficult, you guys.
All right. Section over. You got it. That's
it. Done.
That's
hard. This has been no bad ideas.
That's
listen
right.
to us. No, and I'm curious about how you find the what the best way to do this, Mer, because as we talked about at the top of the show, you write novels and you produce podcasts. You do all kinds of things. I know that you sort of run a convention schedule that just like glancing at it makes me weak in the knees. You go to so many places and you're involved in so many events. Is there a secret that you found to being able to do it all?
What people don't realize is that I don't do all of those things every day. In fact, because of various issues I had in January, I haven't recorded a lot recently. Hmm. A lot of times I will, you know, everything I need to do for podcasting can take a day. And that's, you know, good for a week or two. And same with Escape Pod. If I could just settle down and focus. My problem isn't time. It's prioritizing and reminding myself that there are that mental stuff tires you out. Like I have a list of things to do, and none of them are physically taxing, but like when I get halfway through the list, it's like noon and I'm exhausted. And I realize it's because I've been pushing my brain all morning and I need a break from that. You can't just like think all, you know, for 8 straight hours. I don't care what the capitalism day, 8 hour day, work day people say.
Right.
It's really difficult. And so, you know, I have a friend. I say, you know, I work from home. Why don't I get more writing done? She's like, Mer, if you wrote for 8 hours a day, you would lose your mind. And so for me, it's remembering, prioritizing. Okay, I'll take a day and catch up on all my podcasts, and I'll take a day and catch up on all my Escape Pod stuff, which all sounds great, but may or may not happen.
It sounds like bucketing.
Yeah.
Like, and not jumping between contexts, because I know like I have this problem where I just have this gray goop of a schedule where because I'm doing podcasts for myself and sort of with this partnership, and then I'm like freelancing for other brands and clients, and then we'll also work on that, so like we'll get together to work on this show, and then it'll sort of like smoothly transition into like something else, but then we'll like go back to another thing. And, and yeah, like I'm always behind on my email at some level. And
I feel that smoothly going to something else is aspirational.
It
is.
Yeah.
It is sometimes bumpily kind of crashing from one thing to another.
The smooth is like the slick on a highway where you don't want to, it's like a more like careening. So I think it's like, I know for me, I end up in that situation where it's like, why am I so exhausted? And it's like, oh, I've been pushing my brain for 14 hours a day for 3 days in a row. It's not designed for that. I need to get the hell out of my basement.
Yeah.
And get a walk and some fresh air and some food. So I think,
even though you have a lovely basement, let that not
go unsaid.
Yes.
I'm told it's garden level. I have real windows, I promise. I think time management, like there's not like a shortage of time in the sense of there's only as much time as there is. It sounds like practicing boundaries has been really useful for you, Mer.
Mm-hmm. Yes. When I can achieve them, yes.
Right.
And I didn't ask before we started, and I should have, but how crude can I be on this show?
As crude as you like to.
Yeah.
Okay. So when it comes to productivity, Merlin Mann said it best with, do you schedule brushing your teeth? Do you schedule masturbating? No. You just do it when it's important to you. Or you do it because it's a habit. Either way, you don't schedule it. And it's like, if there's something super important to you that you want, as bad as clean teeth or masturbating, then, you know, you shouldn't even worry about, do I have time for it? Because it'll happen. Now, it doesn't happen as well because writing's not as much fun as masturbating. But the thing is, it's one of those things where people tell me, oh, I wish I could quit my job so I could have time to write. And I'm thinking, if you're not writing now when you have 30 minutes here and there, you're not going to be writing when you have 8 hours.
Right.
Because whatever's distracting you right now when you have those 30 minutes,
it's only going to be worse when you have all the time in the world.
I am all about the distractions, and I have the whole day. And you really have to decide, you know, if you want to have some sort of creative pursuit, you need to start it, you know, as soon as you can.
Right. And it also sounds like there's an aspect of compulsion in this where it's like, you know, I think a lot of people have it like it's a fantasy that they could be an artist. But if you're not compelled to do the work,
yeah,
then is it really work that you want to do?
Yeah.
And definitely like something that I've tried to like remind myself is that it's valid work, that it's like real adult work, because I have this sense in my mind, and I'm curious if you guys do too, of just like, because I work on creative things that I enjoy and I love, like it's not either I shouldn't feel tired by doing it because it's fun, or like it's not quote unquote real work because it's mental work. And do you guys either feel that slash have any cheats to get around that other than just sort of reminding yourself that no, this is valid?
You know, yesterday, the three of us had a work day yesterday. The three of us were here in this basement all afternoon doing work. And earlier that day, I had an idea for a thing that I wanted to write down. It was one of those like standing on the train on my way to work and just being like, I've got it. I'm so looking forward to put that down on paper and like to just like get that idea and have it exist. Mm. And then, you know, did my work day. And for the entire work day, I was here, like half my mind was kind of like with the idea and just being like, I'm going to, you know, sit down somewhere, get like a cup of tea and write the shit out of that idea. It's going to be amazing. And then, you know, what happens? Finally I'm able to do that at around 8:30 and I sit down. And when I, you know, get kicked out of the coffee shop at 11, I'd written about a page and a half because I'd been kind of distracted and I sort of hadn't been able to focus. And there's a part of me that is like, my God, like you were so excited about this all day long.
What's
like
wrong with you?
What's wrong with you? And what's wrong with me is that I had the work day in the middle and I had, you know, and I burnt up however many synapses my brain had available that day doing the work that we were doing here. And there is, I think that a little bit it is kind of like calling out that false equivalency of like, well, if it's fun and the thing that you want to do, then it isn't work, and kind of recognizing, you know, no, even if it is fun, you still need to find the way to leave yourself the energy for it, or kind of like revitalize yourself in the way that you need in order to get there. You can't just like expect yourself to push through for 10, 11, 12 hours of straight work.
Yeah. I always get that feeling, like I said, of if I'm tired after just thinking all day or writing or doing something that's purely mental. And I'm like, I didn't even get up. Why am I so tired? It's you know, there are more things to tire you out than physical activity.
Right. I also find that, like, and I've not been the best at this past week, just like physical movement ends up sort of in a weird way, like creating more energy up to a point, obviously. But mm-hmm. like, you know, when I go for a walk in the morning, I find I can sort of stare down a screen a little bit longer than if I just sort of roll out of bed and go straight to that screen.
Right.
I'm curious. There's that expression, if you do something you love, you'll never work a day in your life. What are you guys' perspective on that?
I think it's kind of bullshit.
Yeah. That's sort of what I was hearing in this conversation. I wanted to bring that to
that
to the
strikes
table.
Me as propaganda that somebody came
yeah.
up in.
They're selling something.
Yeah, right. Like they were trying to get out of having to give someone vacation days or something like that when they came up with that phrase.
But it's also the you know, like trying to get more out of you than you're willing to give. Like people who said, the company that did the Walking Dead mobile game got laid off like in the middle of one of the seasons. And they're actually people saying, well, why don't they just get together and make the game? They love doing what they're doing. Why don't they just get together and finish it? God. Without even considering the whole licensing issues.
Of course.
And equipment. To make a computer game.
Right, the overhead of a game studio.
No, it's cool.
Yeah,
they
but
can
they're
get
still
together
doing
in
the whole,
garage.
Like, oh, but if they love it, they should just get together and do it for free. And I don't think that's a very valid thing. Most everybody savaged them with, do you even know what it takes to make a computer game? Do you think they want to eat or feed their families as well?
Right, and it's like all things being free, sure, why not? But we don't live in that world yet.
And I think that like that is also like a big part of the problem that, you know, do you know what it takes to make X thing? Probably the answer is no. Probably the answer is no. There isn't that collective conscience about, oh, you know, it's this many hours of labor. It's this much effort and skill and dedication in order to get this thing to a place where it is consumable.
And feels effortless a lot of the time.
So I want to come back to your original question, Gabrielle, because I think there are a couple of things that I've heard that I definitely can agree have been useful for me in terms of how do I spin as many plates as I spin.
Which is a lot.
A non-zero amount.
Yeah.
And so like, I think one of the things that Murr, you brought up is this idea of bucketing, and I'm not the best at it, but it definitely makes a difference when I do it to like take a day and make it the email day and then be done. Or like, you know, maybe the only other thing I'm doing that day is running errands outside of my basement. And then like take a day and have that be a writing day and just go to the coffee shop and not leave until gosh darn it, the thing is written.
Oh yeah.
Or like make it an editing day. And there are some days, some weeks, most weeks where I just can't do that for just the nature of the work that I'm doing. Like I just have more editing work these days than I am used to having. So a little bit of editing better get done, like, you know, three days a week. And so, you know, that's not just going to be a tax day, you know, where I take care of like taxes, which is my favorite thing. Spreadsheets are my friend, but they feel like my frenemy. I guess like the other thing that I think has made a huge difference is focusing on the partnerships that, like, I think a lot of the projects that I've been working on over the last few years that have petered out have been things that I've tried to do alone. And focusing on like bringing people in that I either have a creative crush on or that I like think is like better than me in some way has been a huge, huge lift in terms of being able to do more than one project at a high level over an extended period of time. I don't know what other hacks or sort of best practices you guys have found to sustain multiple creative projects.
My problem with that is, and again, with what I said, you know, the suggestion I had is I always think I would love to take one day and do all of these things, but I think in my brain, I'm thinking everything is a blank slate. And so now I'll just do the emails. But when I'm doing having my email day, I know that in the back of my mind, I'm like, the podcast stuff is on fire and I've got a deadline due and the magazine stuff is needed. And and so then I end up like doing a little bit of everything and not feeling like I'm getting ahead. And I need to I just need to allow them. Because if I'm behind, they can afford to be behind one more day or two more days I try to get my brain on the right track. But I think a lot of people think that pros have some sort of grand productivity system. And I know for a fact a lot of them just stumble through as best they can. As long as we're hitting deadlines and not letting our listeners down entirely, then, you know, we're doing okay.
You are crushing all my dreams right now. I so hoped that you were about
I'm
to tell
sorry,
us
man.
Exactly what the amazing productivity
really
system
was. I really
wish
I had the answer. I really did.
Well, I think that points to like something true, that there's not an answer so much as there is living in the question of like, you know, because there's always like, I think a way to make it that much less painful or stressful or terrible, even if there's not ever going to be like, I like to say balance isn't Boston. It's not like a place you get to and you're there. It's like this active process.
Yeah. I think two big things that have helped me is not looking at my phone first thing in the morning and, you know, trying to silence stuff or turn off the internet if I don't need it when I'm working. I don't always achieve this big step, but I know not starting my day with reading Twitter and getting angry or getting bogged down in emails, but instead starting the day with what I want to do actually is a big help. So there's your magic bullet, at least a little bit, which is don't look at email or your phone or news first thing in the morning. Right. Just focus on yourself so you can you'll feel better once you start facing the day.
That's
the
awesome.
The first thing that I'm going to do after we are done recording is go out and buy an alarm clock. So I don't use my phone as an alarm clock. I'm going to use this starting tomorrow.
There you go. You can also, you could use your phone, just not look at it. You know,
I know
it's tough.
Yeah, I was gonna say, how do you use like the new settings? And I don't know if you have an iPhone or what.
Yeah, I have an iPhone.
Okay, I know they just like released a bunch of settings where you can like have it babysit me, but it still lets me get 15 more minutes on like social networks and stuff.
I haven't turned that on yet. I've just trained myself. You know,
sure.
I get up and I pick my phone up and I put it in my pocket. Like bathrobe pocket, and I go downstairs and I, you know, I'll use it to play music, but I don't read my email and I don't open Twitter because that is where madness lies.
Oh yeah. Yeah, no, I would need to sleep with it in a different room in order to get like a little bit of distance away from it.
I started, the big step that I took was I used to sort of look at my computer until late and it would end up being right by my bed in the morning when I woke up. And so now it stays in a different room where I can't open it up first thing.
Right.
But yeah, I haven't quite trained myself to not look at my emails first thing. I need to be better about that, because you're right. It sort of takes your focus away from anything that you are thinking of or any intentionality that you have during the day to like what other people want of you.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a rabbit hole that goes down, 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 and down.
There was an editor who once said that making your to-do list off of your email is essentially letting email be your world-writable to-do list.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is so true and also incredibly scary.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow. All right, I need to completely revamp all my habits. This is it. Starting tomorrow, entirely different routine.
Yeah, it's like we're not even talking about writing anymore, but we're talking about getting the mindset to easily get into a writing brain space. And if you're already stressing about all that other crap, then it's going to be difficult.
Oh, it follows you with you wherever you go.
And I think pinging off of what Zach was saying earlier about if you take a walk in the morning, your brain is ready to do things in a different way than if you kind of like roll straight out of bed and into the work. I think that there's a difference between kind of, you know, you wake up, you get out of bed, you go brush your teeth, you make yourself a cup of coffee versus you wake up and you spend 45 minutes in this twilight zone of kind of being awake, but you're still lying down in bed. You're kind of looking at your phone and your brain is half there, half still asleep. That's a note on which to begin the day. Mm. And I begin my day on that note often. Way too often.
Yep, exactly. But the thing is, it's hard to do. And I can't remember which book it was. I read a lot of books on productivity and habit, hoping one of them is going to stick. But one thing that really hit me was the problems we have with habits are bad habits have instant gratification, while good habits have delayed gratification. So, you know, you have, if you don't take a drink tonight, then you don't get to feel the benefits of not having a hangover until tomorrow morning. If you do take a drink tonight, you get to feel the drink tonight. And say that about anything else. I recently decided I had to give up red meat, and I'm pissed off about it because nothing is going to readily change in my life except for not eating red meat. Whereas if I ate red meat, I would have the pleasure of eating red meat. And so the benefits that I'm supposedly giving my body, I'm not going to, and a lot of it's preventative, but now we're getting on diet and stuff. But it's like, if you do all this stuff that's preventative, you don't even know what bullets ran past you because you haven't been eating red meat. But you know it is better for you. You just have to remember that building a good habit helps that delay. So your brain gets the little ping of dopamine when you wake up in the morning and you look at your phone and you look at, oh, look at all these people who love me, who've emailed me and said all these terrible things or given me lots of stuff to do. Crap. That dopamine gets sour really fast. You know, you realize if I don't look at the phone and I just focus on myself, maybe in a couple of hours, I'll be in a better mindset to start my day. So you don't get that hit. But it's one of those things that seemed obvious once the author said it, but I'd never thought about it that way.
Right, because I think that we sort of live with this idea of if you make good choices, good things happen to you. But oftentimes those good things are so buried and often end up being kind of like, yes, like the dodging of bullets.
Yeah.
That it can sometimes can feel like they aren't there. Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, don't look at your phone when you get up and you'll be a better writer. There we go. There's my absolute. I'm sorry. I hate absolutes in writing advice. So
I think that we have now veered into the realms of life advice.
And life so advice, I think that yes.
I think absolutes and life advice may be okay in a way that I don't know if they are in writing advice.
Okay. True.
All right. And I think that is going to be it for this discussion and this back half of No Bad Ideas. So many thanks to Mer Lafferty for coming on the show and for being an amazing guest. If you want to get more of her work or hear more about her thoughts, get more of her writing, there are a couple places where you can do that. You should definitely check out her website at merverse.com. That's MURVERSE.com. And you can also check out her Twitter at Mighty Mur. That's MIGHTYMUR at Mighty Mur. And finally, if you want to hear more of her thoughts, check out escapepod.org, where you'll be able to hear one of the many great shows that she helps to run and make happen. So thank you so much for being on the show. And thank you all so much for listening.
Thank you so much.
This was a lot of fun, guys. Thank you for inviting me.
Oh, yeah, anytime. Such a privilege to have you on. This has been No Bad Ideas, produced by Gabrielle Urbina, Sarah Shackett, and Zach Valenti. Today's episode features music by State Shirt and Jazar from freemusicarchive.org. You can support the show at patreon.com/nobadideas. And if you love the show, please leave a rating or review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. Thanks. See you next week.